Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. We've got a great show prepared for you tonight. I'm bringing on someone who has actually been on Evident Footprints as a caller, and he is a good friend of Rick Adams, who has been on this show a number of times since I've been on the air, and both on another network as well as on BBS Radio. And he comes highly recommended. I can tell you, you're in for some interesting information and an interesting ride. Here we are, November the 19th, already now on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, November the 20th. 2 days away from the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. This date, 11/22, coming up, is a kind of an interesting mystical date in that the number 22 couches or hides two number 11s. 22, of course, is 2 times 11. And the month 11 followed by the number 22 is 3 11s, or it adds up to a 33. These are numbers that are very important to the Illuminati, the planetary controllers that would like to establish a new world order. And so we pay attention to dates like that. They certainly have significance in the past, and they did on the 22nd of November, 1963. That was the date that President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. If you think it's a chance event that occurred, I assure you the date they picked had a lot of numerological meaning to it. There are people who study the Bible codes and the general workings of numbers, because God's universe is written in mathematics as well as in music and light and love, and ultimately all of this is information. We can take information and use it properly, correctly, with integrity, or we can use it for more destructive purposes. And those that dabble in the black arts have a tendency to do the latter. Tonight we want to bring some enlightenment to you from a slightly different perspective, and we're going to be all over the place for a number of reasons. Number one, our guest is a biblical scholar, and yet he has a very interesting perspective on a lot of biblical issues. I am, as many of you know, I'm familiar with the Bible. I've read the Bible many times throughout my life. And yet I'm not one to memorize large portions of Scripture. I do have certain Scripture that I like, and we're going to be talking about those that apply to things like vibration. The Psalms that were written by David absolutely had God's handiwork in them. And if you are familiar with that text in the Bible, you know that it's like reading lyrics in a song. And those of you that know music know that those lyrics, which were really prayers, they were supplications to the Lord, were like music. And you might have even heard music as you read through those. We're going to be talking about some of those things and how they apply to what's going on today. We're going to talk about prophecy, and I'm sure we'll be talking about false prophecy. And at some portion of the show, we're going to continue along the theme of empowerment that we've been following the past couple of weeks. And I think we could draw some analogies to illusions. A false prophet is a false prophet because he or she will dabble in illusions as much as they will in some of the truths. In fact, the truth is often hidden within many of the illusions to give it some authenticity or the appearance of authenticity. So we want to be able to discern these things, and tonight's guest is going to help us do that in his own way. And this will be a new experience for me. I'm sure I'm going to learn some things tonight along with the listening audience. So as we welcome our guest, I'd like to say hello to Joe Church. Joe, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Hi, Don. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That was quite an introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
Well, you and I had a little bit of a chance to discuss what we were going to cover tonight, and after you and I talked, I thought I would add this dimension at the tail end or interspersed in the middle there. We'll just play it by ear. I think it would be interesting for us to talk a bit about the concept of fear so that we can dispel fear, because fear is really an illusion, and if we're going to be talking about illusion at all, I think it would be very appropriate.
Sure, definitely.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. So, you know, the listening audience has a good understanding of what your background is and how you got interested in the word.
Okay, I'm from Rhode Island. I was born and raised in Rhode Island. I went to Catholic school when I was a young fella, right up to the 12th grade. As a young fella, maybe 7, 8, 9 years old, I used to get my mother's Bible out and look at the pictures in it. In those days, they had pictures in the Bible. And I was really curious as to what these pictures were with angelic beings and people with wings and, you know, and just the overall pictures got me stimulated to read the book. And so at a young age, I started reading, and I at one point, I probably had to ask for help with the words. But I gradually started to read the volume of the book, and there were many things that were non-understandable to me at that time. I kind of couldn't grasp the idea of certain things, and you know. But I struggled through it. I got through it. And there were parts that were very interesting to me, and also in my younger years, I had. And I didn't know it at the time, but I had, I guess you would call it visitations.
Mm-hmm.
When I used to, this is between the ages of, let's say 7 and, no, about, 8 and 12, I'd say, right around there. I used to, be sleeping in my room, and I'd look out the window that, if you sat up, you could look out a window.
Mm-hmm.
There was a barn next door to the house, a garage, an old garage. And this garage always seemed to be on fire when these events happened. And, I mean, it was a tremendous fire. I mean, the whole window lit up. I said, oh, the barn's on fire. And then in the house, in my house at the same time, there were small individuals is the best way I could describe them. Sometimes there were a few of them, maybe 8 to 10. Sometimes there were a house full of them. But there were beings that were maybe about 1 to 2 feet high. And they just walked around the house, you know, didn't say anything, but just knew I was there and I knew they were there. And I remember in those times that my mother used to, during the daytime, she used to pass out a lot. Sometimes she used to say to me, "Can you catch me? I'm going to pass out." I said, "Wow, this is very interesting." But then later on in the scriptures, when I studied, I always noted that when the supernatural came around, all the biblical agents that wrote or were part of the scriptures always fell down as weak. And I noticed that when I was in bed watching these individuals, I was like almost paralyzed, especially at first. However, later on, I was able to actually even walk in the midst of them. So there was a paralyzation at first. And but I just had a regular life other than that. I played basketball for teams, and I was very athletic, and went to college, was a star baseball player at the University of Rhode Island for a couple of years. And that's basically about it. Don, I've led a very simple life. Was a security guard most of my life, owned my own business. I used to like to do security because I was able to study the scriptures at the same time, and it allowed me many, many hours of study. And I actually got paid for it. The Father's good to us. He actually paid me for studying the scriptures.
Now, I'm wondering, if I can interrupt you here, Joe, and ask you about these beings that you saw. Okay, now, we talk about some pretty interesting topics on Evident Footprints. You've heard the show, so you know that we don't mince words, and we get right to the heart of whatever we can. We do our best to arrive at the truth as directly and as quickly as possible in everything that we discuss. And there are a lot of issues that we talk about that are very controversial. Now,
yes,
you're describing these beings as 1 to 2 feet tall.
Yes,
Can you give us any more description about what they look like? I mean, are we talking about baby gray aliens here, or are we talking about angelic beings?
They were definitely from a different dimension. I'd say they what the scriptures refer to as supernatural agents.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I noted, Don, at the same time, I don't know exactly how this happened, but they implanted something behind my right ear.
Okay.
And for many, many, even about a year, maybe a year and a half, where they made the incision, right behind the back lobe of the ear, right into where it meets the bone, it used to always ooze. It felt like it was always bleeding. But when I put my finger there, it was just like clear liquid.
Mm-hmm.
It kept oozing from where they made the insertion. In other words, it didn't bleed, but it just had like a mucus that seemed to be always there. And but to describe them, I would say they were about 2 feet tall. And the best thing I could do, in fact, when they came around, during the daytime, when young kids would come to the house, I'd kind of like bend down on my knees and kind of walk. And that's the impression they gave me when they walked.
Mm.
It was like us when we kneel down and kind of like waddle.
Mm-hmm.
That was the way they kind of got around. But they looked like small people.
Okay, so they were human in appearance then.
They were kind of like human in appearance, yes.
Did they tell you who they were?
Short legs and long arms. What?
Okay, did they tell you who they were or where they were from? Did they speak to you at all? Or?
Not in the sense of you and I speaking. But I think that they...
Say telepathically?
I think it was more telepathically. Now that I look back at these words are probably the words you use. Mm-hmm. There was a communication, but not a verbal. And other things were happening simultaneously. I used to go up to the ceiling of my room and look down on myself. And then sometimes I'd travel through the universe and come back to my bedroom.
Okay, were you in a waking state when this happened, or did this happen after you went to sleep?
No, this was in a this is while I was awake.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't like a dream that you usually have. It was, that's what was so unusual about it.
You're describing a classic out-of-body experience, which is referred to in metaphysics as astral projection. And it's actually quite a natural thing. There's a lot of myths about what causes it and whether or not it's safe to do. I personally would have an issue with somebody making an incision anywhere on my body. And now, have you ever had an X-ray taken to see what this implant looks like?
Well, it's a funny thing. I had an incident where I banged my head and I had to go for an X-ray. And the doctor came out and he told me, he said, we don't see any problem with the neck or the back of the head. He says, however, there's something in the right lobe of your head that I would definitely have checked out. It's got nothing to do with, and he was he was kind of like surprised when he was talking to me, you know. He was trying to tell me in a nice way to have it checked out. In other words, he was telling me it was there, and right away it came to mind, that particular incident.
Yeah, you definitely got an implant. And I would, well, we can say that these aren't angelic beings, because I've never heard an account of an angel implanting someone, you know, with an incision behind their right earlobe, or left earlobe for that matter. I had the impression so you were coached in some way, or you were taught some skills which are considered to be advanced skills in metaphysics, especially being able to discern these things and recall them and have an awareness of them. Did they explain to you why they were there, what their purpose for being there, and why they chose you? Any of those things you could share with the listening audience?
I think it was kind of like, I grew up kind of in a tough area, Don, kind of in a very poor area. And in those days, you had to become, you had to develop a tough hide. In other words, you were dealing with some tough kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to mature very fast to survive in this area. And I think they were there to probably toughen me up, if you would, spiritually and physically.
That's okay.
The best that I could probably say. I'd say even though they were negative, it was ultimately a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now when you say they were negative, I mean, I'm sure you're seeing some aspect of this as you know, you were an abductee, number one. These were beings, they weren't from the land of Oz. We know that because they didn't implant Dorothy or Toto. And you may hear me be a bit humorous, but it's not to demean what you went through.
No.
You know, we're looking at this and we're discerning what's going on here. And, I know you well enough from the conversations that we've had to know where your heart is and where your intent is. So this is quite a revelation to be sharing this with people all over the world too. We have countless cases of this. This is yet another one. Now, Had anyone prior to you coming on the show, have you shared this publicly with anyone in this sort of forum on the radio or?
No.
You had
first time. I shared it with one other individual.
Uh huh.
On a private basis.
Yeah. Do you mind my asking you, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, what you're feeling as you're doing this? Is it a sense of relief or,
I say it because I think there's very important information that I'm going to bring forth.
Okay.
And I think it's very important, especially in this time, the human experience, that people start to understand the positive and the negative part of the Creator's plan. I think
okay.
This could be a good lead into it.
Okay. Now, I can tell you from my background, and my listening audience knows this to some extent, and every show that occurs, I'm revealing a bit more of myself to my listening audience. So, I'll share some things with you, and there are some new listeners out there every night, so I'm not going to presume that the listening audience knows everything about me, and it's going to take many years of shows for that all to come out, but that would be the case with anyone's life, for that matter. I had what we would call psychic abilities or psychic gifts from a very young age, and as you probably well know, as the listening audience knows, many times those events, when described by a child, are often discouraged. They're suppressed, and it's sort of like, we don't talk about these things, you know, that's your imagination or that's not real. And so you have a real experience, and yet you're discouraged from sharing it. It's taboo to discuss it, and so it becomes suppressed. And really, in a sense, it has the overall impact is that it retards the development of what really I've come to learn is a gift that we all share to some extent or another. Now, the non-believers out there are never going to be convinced, or let's say those that have not experienced these things are never going to be convinced, and yet there's so much information that comes out in light of what these gifts mean and why we have them. I've came to the realization pretty young in my life that these were special gifts that I had, and I would be using them at a later time in my life, which is exactly what I'm doing now. I'm using it in my research. I'm using it to benefit mankind. And these are really gifts from God. But we all have them, and for a variety of reasons, each one of us has a different perspective of what these gifts are. We have different levels of ability or competence in these areas, and the overall science is referred to as metaphysics, and yet they call a person with these gifts certain names. They'll call them a psychic or a clairvoyant, a clairaudient, a telepath. Sometimes these gifts just manifest in an individual, and they'll be labeled a healer, or some people go into a ministry and they become prophetic, and there are various aspects of these gifts, but ultimately we all in a spiritual state have all of these abilities. So when we're in the body, and because of the nature of living in a three-dimensional world and in a three-dimensional body, which is living in this matrix that we're in, which is a controlled society, controlled in every way you can imagine, with the intention of ultimately enslaving all of us, and to a large extent, we already are enslaved. It's difficult for people to get a handle on this. You have a lot of people with a, let's say, a religious background that look at this as if it were something demonic. Yet Jesus himself said that there were going to be individuals that performed miracles greater than the ones he performed. So he knew about these things, and he was actually quite adept at the same things. Prophecy definitely was one of his gifts, but healing was another. And, of course, he could discern, and discernment is really understanding, being able to step outside the mind and the limitations of the mind and see the truth for what it really is in its purest sense.
Sure.
And so I have incorporated discernment into my research. In fact, I believe that my discernment is there for that purpose.
Sure.
So that we can arrive at the truth. And it's not my truth. It's God's truth.
That's right.
It's truth is what it is, and what I think about it or what I'm unaware of doesn't change what the truth is. That's a given. That's an unchangeable aspect of reality. And
thing about the truth, Don. The truth will always win out in the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My listening audience has heard me say this quite a bit, and many of my guests as well. So I share this with you, Joe, not to talk your head off, but just to let you know that, you know, this is an area where I've had a lot of experience, and I'm also, because I'm intuitive, because I'm discerning, I'm also very aware of the types of phenomenon that you're describing. And I've even gone on investigations looking up ancient crash sites or some of the earlier crash sites. I say crash sites, meaning a flying saucer with aliens from another planet landing on the Earth and having the whole event covered up by our government, by the military. And I have been very accurate in my findings when I'm told at the end of the investigation that the location I determined was the actual physical location of the crash explains why the police department from that area is in the photo.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So even though there have been other psychics that have, let's say, done readings or investigated these cases to the best of their ability with the best of intentions of finding it. They were in the general area, but they were not specifically in the area that would identify or, allow one to determine why certain law enforcement officials were in photographs. And, these things are explained away as plane crashes and, it's a pretty moving event when a preacher in Missouri, in southeastern Missouri in 1941, gives the last rites to three dead aliens that just crashed in a flying saucer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I understand these things, and I've studied many, many similar events, and many of the events that you're describing. I know people that are having similar experiences today as we speak. So this is a phenomenon that's been going on this planet for thousands of years.
Right.
So you're not alone. Our listening audience is probably riveted to the edge of their seats right now. So
hopefully this program tonight will be a blessing to people in that position.
Well, yes. We want to dispel myths, and we want the truth to come out, because the understanding comes from facing it and recognizing that it's there, not from pretending that it's not.
Right.
Okay. So you've then dealt with this your whole life. Did you ever have that implant checked out?
No, I never pursued it.
Okay.
I'll tell you why, Don.
Okay, I'm going to let you bring your message forth. I have the feeling I should shut up now and let you speak.
The reason I never brought it forth was because I felt that it was a very personal, individual thing with myself and my father. And if it was okay with him to allow it, it was okay with me. I just had to deal with it, and there was a reason for it. Maybe at the time I didn't know what it was, but it has made me much stronger spiritually and physically to go through the events that I would go through in the rest of my life. I would just like to say that we talked about fear and how fear can overcome you. If you know the Father's economy and his plan, his overall plan, it dispels fear. In other words, fear can't survive in his economy. Once you're strengthened with his knowledge, you have nothing at all to fear. In other words, what you seem to think is a negative thing happening in your life will ultimately turn out to be the most positive thing that you as an individual will need to go forth into the, not into the future of this flesh age, but into the eternity. This is like a small kindergarten here, which we're learning valuable lessons so that going into the eternity to do our work, we will have all the strength that we need to perform at top performance. In this flesh age, we have what's called the sun and the moon. Now, the sun is the true light for this earth. It warms the earth. The moon is a reflection of the true light. The moon in itself does not give light, but it's a reflection of the true light. You see, the moon illuminates. And you were talking about illumination earlier, Illuminati or something like that.
Yeah.
The moon illuminates true light. That's why it's so close to the real truth. When you see something that you perceive as negative, it's an important part. You see, the moon has an important part, even though it's of a negative mode. The sun has an important part. They're both very important to the in the Father's economy. So, really, the illumination of the true light is nothing to be feared. It's part of his plan. That would be the light by the night. Many Indian tribes across the country, I know when I used to watch the cartoons and the stories when I was younger, so I noticed some of the Indians said that, oh, that fellow was here many moons ago. They used to talk about days as moons.
Mm-hmm.
And other Indian tribes would talk about them as suns. Many suns ago, the fellow was here. So some measured their days in suns and some in moons. That's why we're under the moon calendar. It has to make adjustments every so many years. Whereas if you live by a solar calendar, that would be day by day. So, you see the positive and the negative parts of the Father's plan. Don't be afraid of the negative, because ultimately that will be the most positive thing, probably in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, having said that, I'd like to talk about the First World Earth Age.
Okay. If I can comment on what you said, just brief. I've always perceived, and I tend to agree with you, that, you know, the sun represents the truth, or the true self, and the moon, being that reflection, represents the subconscious self. Now, there's truth in the subconscious, but if you notice how people act when there's a full moon, they do some really crazy things.
Right.
And it's really a manifestation of their fears. or the aspects of them that come out without them really thinking about it. They do crazy things because it doesn't take a lot of thought to do a crazy thing.
Right.
So I'm just affirming what you say from my perspective.
And on a physical sense, purely physical sense, if the ocean can be raised 8 to 10, 12 feet by the moon, the gravitational pull of the moon, the body is 80 to 85% water. And also farmers, when they grow their crops, they plant seeds at a time when the water is brought up by the moon closer to the surface of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So that the germination process would be much more efficient.
Yes.
The First World Age, then. This earth was a beautiful place at one time. I just want to tell the folks, the information that I'm bringing forth is my opinions after many, 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 many 50 years of study.
Okay.
50 years of in-depth study. So these are my opinions as to what the scriptures tell me, and this information comes from the scriptures.
Sure.
There was a First World Age, Don. It was a beautiful place. No storms. Dew every morning. Flowers were beautiful. The atmospheres of pressure were such that an individual could jump up and maybe travel for 15, 20 feet because of the atmospheric pressure. It was a creation by the Father that was something to behold, and a place that he found favor with when he hung this earth in its orbit and in relation to the sun, so that it would have beautiful contours and beautiful colors. And then there was a problem. You see, in Genesis 1:1, it says God created the heavens and the earth, period, and they became void and without form. See, the earth was created beautiful, but then it became void and without form. When I was a young kid, I used to wrestle with that verse. I used to say, well, what does this mean? It didn't make too much sense to me at that time. Then later on when I studied in the Hebrew, I said, well, it makes a lot of sense now. And then I saw other places in the scriptures where it brought it forth. But there was a point in which the earth became knocked off its axis from true north to magnetic north, and that produced all the storms that we have. And there were tremendous floods, if you will. Not Noah's flood, which many have referred to it as. I plant that seed. But this was a flood in prehistoric times. And it really caused tremendous damage in some parts of the earth. One in particular, that I believe, was a major, what you would call a stronghold in the First World Age, was a place known today to us as the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, that was a very special stronghold of rebellious angels to the Father. And there was a tremendous destruction in that area. And you can see the amount of water that was poured out on that particular area for destruction. That was a violent outpouring. And other places in the earth, I'm sure, have the same. I often wondered about the Middle East, with all the desert sands there. What caused that desert to be to be there.
It looks like a nuclear wasteland, doesn't it?
Yes, in other deserts around the world.
Yes.
However, even with that destruction, it's no accident that the oil is buried underneath these areas. And, you know, a blessing to some peoples today on the earth. We had the dinosaurs. We had the woolly mammoths. And one particular area that I'd like to go into is the woolly mammoths. These beings were found in the tundra of Alaska in Russia, found frozen in the tundra with buttercups fresh in their mouth and in their stomach. And I've asked scientists, what could cause a woolly mammoth to be frozen instantly? While they were eating in a lush vegetation of buttercups, in other words, it was things were green all around them. They were eating vegetation. And all of a sudden, without warning, they were frozen solid in an instant. And scientists have said to me, well, only nitrogen could cause this type of a thing. But they said even with nitrogen, it would be kind of a slower process. It wouldn't be an instantaneous. And when they thawed these, some of the archaeologists that have thawed these out in later times said the meat was so fresh because it was frozen so instantly that the dogs that they had with them actually ate the meat. It was so fresh. An incident like this happening, and it's interesting that the time frame of the woolly mammoths is between 14 and 18,000 years ago, if my facts are correct on that. But I see the two creations in the Genesis story. There was a six-day creation of man or mankind. If you understand the Hebrew, there's three men that are involved in that creation. There was the six-day creation. There was the eighth great day creation. And one of the men was mankind that was used in one part of that Genesis 1. The six-day creation would have been, a day is as 1,000 years, so 1,000 year generation, 1,000 year, the 7,000 year creation. Now my phone might be going out here, so I might have to switch phones. I
can hear my phone. Okay, if that happens, we can go into a break and, you know, reestablish contact with you.
All right, then.
So hopefully Seth is paying attention.
All right. So you've got 2 7-year creations, and that adds up to, and this would be the second 7-year creation that we're involved in now in this age. So you've got a 14,000-year period here. Isn't it interesting that the woolly mammoths disappeared 14,000 to 18,000 years ago, frozen in the tundra of Alaska? The Chinese list their creation story. They say that they have 10,000 years of written history. That's a written history, but they might go back a few years before that without some. Korean, I've investigated, they said 7,000 years of written history. These are all very important things to me as far as seeing this first world age and the destruction of it, what actually happened. What I'm going to bring forth is my understanding from the scriptures as to what happened with the angelic beings that lived in that first world age. hear me all right then?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. In the First World Age, in Job 38:7, it says, "When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy." All the angelic beings that lived in that First World Age, the Father has allowed to pass through this flesh age. He put each one of those angelic beings inside a flesh body. And we're going to see here the reason that we're here in flesh bodies on this earth today. And the things that I'm about to say. You know, a lot of people ask, they say, what is this all about? Why are we here today? What is this? Why flesh bodies? Why do these things happen?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to touch on that stuff. Dan, I've got a ringing in my phone. It keeps beeping, so I'm just going to change phones here.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a short pause. Here, you're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Joe Church, and I will be right back, so don't go away, folks.
A monthly 24-page newspaper, its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says in Ezekiel 7:19. Call 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Remember, food will be your greatest asset. Call 908-691-2608. This product does not contain THC. Call 908-691-2608 today.
Okay, we're back with Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Joe Church. Joe, are you with us? Doesn't sound like Joe's with us. Seth, or if you're hearing me, let me know what's up with Joe. I'm not getting Seth either. Yo, Seth. Okay, I guess he's establishing contact with our guest. Well, this is pretty interesting. While he's doing that, I'll fill in a little bit here. This is pretty interesting information. I was unaware that Joe had this experience as a young boy, and often these messages come to us in the most unexpected ways. So I would have to presume that we're going to get some more revelation here. Quick reminder about tomorrow night's show, which would be November the 20th. We will be graced again with the wisdom and intellectual prowess of none other than attorney Carl Pearson from New York City. And we're going to be discussing many of the self-empowerment concepts in rebuilding our communities from the ground up, and a new concept that he's come forward with, and share some recent developments along those lines. Joe, are you with us again?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. I'm glad we were able to. Hopefully you'll make it through the rest of the show now.
Hopefully with this phone, yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see. We were discussing some scripture here now, and you know, if you want to continue where we left off before that break, by all means, be my guest. You are the guest, anyway.
Okay. So it was a beautiful place, and then there was a problem, and what happened was, all the created angelic beings that we were in the first world age, a third of all created angelic beings, parts of the Father that were created, rebelled against him. And you see, the Father had two bodyguards, if you would, two close lieutenants, if you would, that guarded the mercy seat, so to speak, and were his protectors. And one of those protectors wanted the seat, wanted to perform a coup. He wanted to steal God's authority and his throne. Powerful individuals created by him, one wanted his seat. And he was able to persuade a third all his created angels that he was more powerful than the Father. And so he convinced a third of the angelic beings. Now the Father had a problem. He could have destroyed all those that went with the coup. Could have destroyed all those angelic beings. But he decided, you know, it's very difficult to destroy one of your children. As we could see in a flesh age, very, very, very difficult. So the Father wanted to give every opportunity for them to redeem themselves. So what he said was, I'm going to create a whole new age. I'm going to take away the memory that you had when you chased after this archangel. And I'm going to take away that memory of what you did. I'm going to put you in a flesh body this time. A flesh body that can bleed, disease, cut, have problems. And I'm going to see what decision you make this time around. So, this is the reason why we're here today.
Now, my understanding of that event, I might add that, you're, of course, you're speaking about Satan. He was known as Lucifer in heaven. And he was the chief musician, and he was known to be quite beautiful.
Right.
And that in an instant, his revolt was such an ugly event that he took on that appearance.
Right. He had all the tools. He had all the knowledge. He had all the abilities. He walked up and down on the stones of fire. He was the highest of the high, except for the Father. And he was known as the bright morning star. So a third were deceived in that first world age. And Don, I say today, we're living at the end of this age, the very end of this age, and many that were deceived in that first world age are being deceived again now. Because the same scenario is coming about at the end of this age. Allowed by the Father, allowed by the Creator, so that that event could set up the same way it did at the end of the first world age, and he wants to see who's going to follow him again. And this, I believe, is where we are right now.
Are we taking any names down at this point in the show? I have a few suggestions, but
I'd rather not mention. Keep the names out of it. Just talking a purely
yes, you know, I'm
scenario. You know the story. So we have an opportunity here at the end of this age to ask the Father to open our eyes and our ears so that we will understand things of his plan, so that we will not make that mistake going into the upcoming near future. I believe also that this is important. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 55. I'm going to read a couple of verses and comment on it. Behold, I show you a mystery. This is Paul speaking. Let me start with 50. Now I say this, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Neither does corruption inherit incorruption. Behold, I show you a mystery. Now, this is a deep mystery that Paul's showing us here. We shall not all sleep. This word is decease in the Greek.
Mm-hmm.
28:37. We shall not, in other words, we shall not all die.
Yes.
But we shall all, A-L-L, be changed. In a moment, in a twinkling of the eye, at the last trump. This last trump is the same trump that the two witnesses, when they were raised up the streets of Jerusalem at the end, where they were killed, they were raised up. That was that last trump. For the trump shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruption must put on incorruption, and the mortal must put on immortality. Corruption is flesh. Mortality is soul. Some people will have reached a higher level of thinking while they're still in this flesh body and will have reached immortality. In other words, their soul will not be able to die because of certain knowledge that they have, that the Father has allowed them to have. The corruptible must put on incorruptibility. In other words, we must get rid of this flesh body, get a new body, but their soul would still still be liable to die. And this is what some Christians refer to as the millennial age of teaching, or the millennial age. It'll be 1,000 years of teaching. But remember, days is 1,000 years too, so it could be one day when you have that full knowledge that we're lacking today. There's going to be a change take place. Until that change comes, until that flesh is changed into a body that you could probably put your hand through your other hand, or you can pinch yourself and you can't feel it. It'd be that type of body, but it'd be a recognizable body. Much like the body that Jesus had when he returned to the disciples after the resurrection. And he walked through the door, or through the wall, if you would. That type of dimension body.
Mm-hmm. Or a light body.
A light body, now, yes. I heard you refer to that, yes. That's basically what we're looking for as far as the change of bodies. Until that time comes, you see, that's when we'll meet Jesus face to face, when that change comes. We'll know him. We'll know him. His truth, his entire truth will be implanted in us. And then the discipline for 1,000 years, the discipline of following that truth. Remember, we won't be in a flesh age anymore. We won't be in a flesh body. We won't have to deal with any of those things that are concerns with the flesh body, how the flesh body fears this and fears that and has this idiosyncrasy and this thing and that thing, and it has to eat and it diseases and it has problems and this and that. All designed by the Father.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Allowing his plan to come to pass.
Mm-hmm. What you're describing in metaphysics and you know, there this enters the New Age discussion, although I would like to caution people to be discerning about what we call New Age, because this is also an invention of those that control this realm to give us this illusion that we are separate from God, and that we are, how should I say, we are at a stage in our history where we are going to become something else, but it's not of God's doing, and this is being taught in the churches. And in these churches, what we're experiencing, it's described in the Bible as false prophecy. There are all these false prophets that are not teaching the truth and leaving people expecting to be taken up into the air. You have those that are describing the event as 144,000 individuals out of 7 billion that are going to actually be the recipients of God's grace, and the remaining 7 billion minus this 144,000 are going to be somewhere else. And no one gives a definitive answer. There is so much untruth being spoken in a religious sense that it becomes another crutch, another hurdle for people to overcome. Seth, if you're hearing me, we're getting a little bit of echo. I don't know if you're hearing that, Joe. I'm getting an echo. Yeah, I'm getting an echo on the line, Seth, if you can try to subdue that. I think this might be a moment where we could talk about fear for a moment or two. Would you mind?
Not at all. Very important issue.
You know, we've been going through a series of shows over the past few weeks where we're talking about repentance and responsibility, and our relationship with God, and it fully aligns with what you're bringing forth tonight, Joe. We have to identify who we are, and you covered that in the sense that we are all individuations, or we're individuals, and we were created as whole beings, and a synonymous word for a whole being would be a being that is holy, or a being that is sacred. And we've created many problems for ourselves, both through our actions as well as our inactions, through our recognition of what is right and wrong, as well as our denial that any of these things are happening. And so we're at various stages of chaos and insanity, trying to solve our problems using the same old methods that were used in the past. And really, they haven't worked, and yet somehow we believe that if we try them a different way or at a different time or maybe changing one or two aspects of the whole approach, that we are going to arrive at a different conclusion. And it hasn't fixed anything. You look at our government, and I know you'll agree with me because there are four aspects to this matrix that are covered by God's laws. You have the political, you have the educational, you have the religious, and the sociological implications of life in this reality. And so much of what we follow is based upon illusion. So we're trying to sort out our problems using the illusions as solutions. We're led into a state of fear through everything. Fear of losing our home, fear of losing food or not having food, and the destruction of our family or just the quality of our life. There are many conscious fears. There are many subconscious fears.
Fear of losing our soul.
Fear of, well, ultimately, we're afraid of dying, are we not? Or that's losing our soul, those of us that even recognize the soul. Ultimately, most people live in a perpetual state of fear about dying. And that is fed to us. We're indoctrinated into accepting that we die, but there are things that we can buy that stop us from dying. So we have a fear of losing our capacity to own things, to own the material, to purchase the material, to experience the material. Yet it's the nature of our existence, and so we fear success, we fear failure, and we fear ourselves. We really don't know ourselves, and yet if we seek to go about fixing these problems, we go to a person called an analyst. And usually the analysts are people who are expert at paralyzing us, if the fear hasn't already done that. And so we're in this rat race, or we're in this exercise wheel in the hamster cage. The hamster or the mouse that's really moving fast but not going anywhere as the cage spins around in a circle. Go ahead.
In Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14, it gives the reason why Jesus came to this earth. And it says he came to destroy the devil, who is death. You know, all people go through all of their lives with the subconscious or conscious fear of dying.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing that if you know the inner man, how only the Father can destroy that inner man, the soul. No one else can touch it. not get locked into the paradigm of flesh. You've escaped the proverbial guilt trip that men from the beginning of time, from Cain and Abel's time, have tried to put on us. You know, the Father hid the real truth in the Scriptures, even though they were corrupted by the Kenite seed line, the negative part of his plan.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the Scriptures were corrupted, he still hid his truth, morsels of truth in there that even they couldn't see, that only people that had their eyes, the magic sunglasses on, could see. And so don't go on guilt trips, folks. Remember one thing. The Heavenly Father is a good father, and like a good father always treats his children, his sons and his daughters. He says, if you don't know the full truth, and I mean the full truth, you're not getting the full truth today. If you don't know the full truth, you're not accountable. He is not going to put you, destroy your soul. He's not going to destroy your soul until you have the full ability to make the decision whether you'll follow the Father or Satan. Until that point, you'll have to wait till the millennium, or if he gives a gift to you to understand it now, you'll know the truth anyway. You won't be deceived. But just remember, when these false teachers try to put you on a guilt trip, and I mean, let's face it, these are the real culprits. Using the Father's word deceptively for their own monetary gains or their own selfish gains, one reason or another. But these were angelic beings in the first world age that were known as the fallen angels. And, you know, I kiddingly say to some of my friends up here in New England, a lot of these people with the long robes, when they hold their arms up, they have a big tail that swings down because of the bagginess of the arms. I said, if they hold their arms up, it looks just like a wing. It's like a couple of wings. So in the book of Jude, the word pastors, the word angels, translates messengers or pastors. So just remember, search the truth out for yourself. Pray to the Father to give you eyes to see. Don't rely on any man, any flesh man. Anybody in a flesh body, don't believe. Not even me. But unless you know the whole truth, you cannot be destroyed. Don't fear. The Father will give you the full truth in the millennium, in a different body, at that time, so that you can make the proper decision. Right now, people in this earth don't have a chance with what's being taught. Don't have to, not even coming close.
Mm-hmm.
So just don't fear. Don't fear it. But know that your soul, after your flesh is shed, that your soul lives on, and only the Father, the Heavenly Father, can destroy that soul.
You know,
Satan,
Joe,
is just an arm of his plan. Go ahead.
Yeah. Joe, I was when I was contemplating this issue of fear before tonight's show, I was thinking through all the different types of, you know, conscious fear that we have. And we're told about our safety. Right now, we're in days of terror, which is ultimate fear, right?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
And they're selling these military actions, these wars, to us as if it's going to bring about security. Ultimately, one of our fears is that that we're not going to have security. We're fearful of losing that security. Now, isn't it interesting that security, or to obtain security under this insane system, we have to fight wars. We have to kill people, which is denying them security, the victims of the wars. And yet that's explained as a reason for bringing about security. It's insanity.
Sure. But it's not surprising, Don. because this all happened in the First World Age.
And it's just been repeated over and over and over again.
This is an instant replay of the First World Age. You see, the one world system, let me put it this way. The father said about King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, that took his people captive.
Mm-hmm.
He referred to him as Nebuchadnezzar, my servant. The king of Assyria that took the 10 tribes of Israel captive. He referred to the king of Assyria as the work of my hands. See, it's the negative part of his plan.
Mm-hmm.
So don't look at it as being a negative part. Understand, if you have this understanding of this truth, you'll know what pitfalls to avoid. If you see a tree in front of you, you don't walk into it, you walk around it.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are part of the divine dichotomies that are everywhere in the universe. I mean, you have a North Pole, but the North Pole does nothing without the South Pole.
Exactly.
You have hot and cold, tall and short, big and small, on and on and on. We have opposites everywhere. And of course, some are not choices. They're actual conditions that exist, one so that the other exists.
Right.
And
you know, when something happens to me in my life that seems like it's negative,
mm-hmm.
I immediately go to the Father and say, thank you, Father, I needed that. When you can come to that realization, that understanding, fear has no place to make its bed, because you're putting full faith, even no matter what happens in your flesh body or your life, it's for your benefit.
Yeah, I share that with my guests and my listening audience. I get a lot of email. Occasionally we get a call, someone will ask me, even on the Patriot networks. They like to do this on RBN. You know, aren't you afraid you're going to be killed for the information you're bringing out? What should be the price of, the ultimate price of bringing the truth to people? What is a just reward for the truth? And who is the author of lies? You know, you have that dichotomy there. I trust God. I know that my spiritual gifts come from God and that I have them for a reason. You know, I started my life in music, as I told you the other day when we talked off the air. And I've been very blessed with musical gifts.
Right.
And my ability to orchestrate, to make small instruments work together in an orchestra or in a band, have given me the ability to connect the dots of history or the lies of history, the hidden history, and discern what's going on. And there are other people who are researchers that do the same thing. They may not make the same claims about how they arrive at that. They may attribute it just to study and a lot of hard work. But there's a force that drives them to discover these things because they're well hidden many times. And it raises the question, if these things are so important, if they're so true, if they're good, why are they being hidden? And the fact that they are hidden leads one to conclude that they're not good in the sense of being playing that role as the dichotomy. Yes, they are. They ultimately give us the choice. I also see the level of the dark forces and their activities way out of proportion with the light. They've gone way beyond the boundaries of what God would have them do. This is why God will come back and change and allow the earth to make that same change.
Yes.
Because the earth has suffered through this as well.
nature. Even the nature itself is groaning for this, the return of the sons of God.
Oh, yes.
From the first world age.
And you have to imagine...
It's a great time.
Yeah. If you allow your consciousness to expand to what the sun is feeling or what the sun is perceiving, all in all of its illumination, how does it perceive its reflection in the moon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of the negative part of this plan have much of the full truth. Much of the full truth lies therein, but there's that little hook at the end that they get you with. One verse I'd like to bring up, and then I'd like to pursue the music part of it, Don.
Oh, sure, sure.
This is Matthew 24. It's one of the seven seals of the book of Matthew. Those seven seals are also contained in Mark 13 and Luke 21. And the seven seals of the book of Revelation are one and the same. One of those seals is, I'd like to plant this seed in the minds of the listeners. Ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. See, wars and rumors of war. Many teachers teach that there would be wars and rumors of war just before the end. And what this verse is telling us, if you look real closely at it, that's not when the end is going to be. The end is not yet when you hear wars and rumors. But what is the opposite of that? You're going to hear peace and rumors of peace on a global basis. What other way to deceive people than by peace and prosperity? A savior coming in, solving all the problems and issues, snapping his fingers, making lightning come from heaven, performing miracles. The seal has to be placed in the mind so that you would not be deceived in the end times, as it happened in the first world age. So when you see an entity come down that you think is the Messiah, and you're still in a flesh body, I think the message has been gotten through. On the music, Don, I'd like to pursue that a little bit because a good friend of mine up here in Massachusetts asked me if I'd ask you this question. He's a great musician himself, and he listens to your program quite a bit. And he said, make sure you ask Don this question.
Does this person have a name? Does he have a name?
Yeah, John.
John, okay.
John, hopefully he'll call in afterwards.
Okay.
But he's a tremendous musician, and he talks about musicians who play chords and see colors when they're playing a note or a chord.
Yes.
But we were talking about vibrations in the scriptures and music and people who play music. And I believe that people of election, both on the positive and the negative parts, are highly advanced in music. I think their musical talents are great. And I play bass myself. With the help of this friend of mine, I've become a pretty good player. But I wanted to pursue... King David, for example, when Saul was possessed with evil spirits tormenting him day in and day out, he always called David to come and play for him. And when David played for him, it was very soothing to him. And it actually drove the evil spirits right out. There was something in his music, the way he played. I know in Ireland they have the harp of David on their flag. Not sure if it's Northern Ireland or Southern Ireland. One flag in Ireland has the harp of David on it. And in the Psalms, it talks about he played his magic on a 10-string instrument. something about the playing. Ten in biblical numerics would be like the Ten Commandments, the law and its perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Law, following the law, Ten Commandments,
yeah.
If you would. And there was something about the way he played with this ten-stringed instrument that was so soothing to the soul. And vibrations came into the conversation that we had. And I asked the scientist one time, when Jesus walked through the wall, I said, what possibly could cause somebody that could have their disciple put his finger in the hole in his hand and feel that, and yet had the ability to walk through a wall? He said, you'd have to demolecularize. In other words, the activity or the vibrations of the cells would have to be so agitated that they pull farther apart so that you could penetrate the object that you were going through. And that would have to be vibrated. So I kind of was intrigued by that word vibration. I said, well, why don't we ask Don? I said, I think he's pretty knowledgeable in that field. I've heard him talk on that before. So if you could, Don, could you expand on what I just said a little bit?
Okay. you be the host and I'll be the guest. How's that? I'm just kidding.
I know, yeah.
Well, you made an interesting comment. Now, you said John was referring to musicians that play music in general, chords definitely, but music in general. Every note has a corresponding color. I've known this from childhood. This is one of my metaphysical gifts that I can remember hours and hours and hours of practicing the trumpet, and I'd close my eyes and listen to the sound, and I would begin to see colors of the notes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always see the same colors with the same notes, and it wouldn't matter what octave I was playing in. And I have quite a range on a trumpet, many, many octaves, many more octaves than most trumpet players play. And I would experience the same note on a low C, a middle C, a high C, a double high C, or even a triple high C. Now, these are screaming high notes. A double high C is a very high note, and even higher than that is, there are only a handful of trumpet players in the world that can play those notes. It takes many years of practice. But imagine what it afforded me, the opportunity it afforded me to experience the relationship of the tones and colors. It's a very valid, very real experience. And those who are sensitive to see it can see it. Now, I've composed music, let's say, I refer to it as healing music, or it could be music used for meditation or prayer or just relaxing, and it's very energizing, and I use the principles of how the relationships between sound and light affect the light body of the human being. Now, we agree that there is a light body, and ultimately we become totally a body of light. And when we merge with God, we will be part of God's light. And we'll have a consciousness of both God and our individuation. I truly feel that He will never take that away from us. That's something that we will never lose. Now, our understanding of that is going to come about by our consciousness, or our conscious development through our life's experiences. And quite possibly, there is this concept of reincarnation, that we can re-enter as a light body. We can take on another obligation, like this one here, another experience, an oath to fulfill a certain series of experiences that are going to give us lessons to allow us to progress. We are far, far below many higher up on the evolutionary scale in terms of consciousness. Now, accepting the fact that music, if we just imagine, if this is hard for the listening audience to imagine that one can see colors, you could arrange a ray of light that would respond to certain vibrational frequencies. Notes are frequencies. They are measured in hertz or cycles per second. There's a rise and a fall to a note of any duration, which has its representation in color. And so the two, even though they are at different frequencies, the two work very well together and are really inseparable. It's like the person that can speak and their sound, he can be speaking to a deaf person that doesn't hear the sound and still might have another means of discerning what that person is saying. On what level does that occur if it's not occurring through sound? So there are aspects of us that understand or respond to the light aspects of music or the light vibrations that are in the music, in the frequencies. Now, I know people who don't see color or can't play a musical instrument, so they couldn't say, well, when I play this note, I see this color, yet they can see the color in a song, or they can see the color in music. I can write music for the heart center, and it'll be primarily green, but it might have some magenta or a pink color in it, too, because the heart aura can have that color. And they will describe those colors to me, not having any idea. I'll just play the music and ask them what color they see. And I get this response repeatedly from numerous people. So it affirms the fact that we can discern these things and that these this principle can, rightly applied, can have a beneficial impact on us, on our consciousness, on our ability to heal or maintain a healthy body, a healthy mind, and raise our vibration. Because as we improve the quality of the vibrations of the music we listen to, we also can raise our consciousness. This is why certain types of music use drums. For instance, when you're marching someone into battle, that low frequency, that pulse, And the lower tones of a drum stir those energies in the person that enables them to kill, enables them to go into battle, and be around loud noises. You have certain types of music that are really lowering the conscience of people, that there may be some message in the lyrics, but the overall makeup of rap music is very destructive. Still, there's some rap music I can listen to because there's an element in it that is not destructive. But by and large, this music is intentionally created by those that produce it or those that tell the producers how to produce it to cause it to be destructive. We've got a call here. We can come back to this. We've got a call. I think John is on the line here.
Oh, that's great.
John, welcome to Evident Footprint.
Hi, how are you? Now Joe just did it again because I was waiting on the line to ask the question that he asked before I asked. Can you hear me, Don?
Yes, I can. Seth, we got a little bit of echo. If you can try to control that. Okay. Yeah.
Did he
ask the question correctly?
I'm waiting on the line, and Joe asked the question that I was going to ask, and he does this all the time. So I don't know what to ask. Yeah. Oh, I can ask you one question, Don, relating to that. Now, do you think that the 440 tuning is by accident, just a matter of convenience, or do you think it was constructed that way for a purpose?
Okay, the tail end of your question sort of faded out there, but I think I caught it all. For the listening audience, he's asking if the 440 hertz frequency was accidental or intentional. Basically, that's what you're asking.
Yes, and if it had any bearing on the dumbing down process and not having access to those healing frequencies.
My intuition and my knowledge of the numerology of the 440 frequency, if you carry the numerological computation of adding the numbers together,
yes.
4 plus 4 plus 0 equals 8.
Okay.
Okay, and the 8 represents materialism or work. It can represent a windfall of wealth. It's a tribute. The number 8 is considered to be a lucky number in terms of, you know, prosperity, but it's temporary. And it's definitely, if you're putting this in music, if you're tuning instruments to music, you're going to have harmonics and the various octaves associated. They're going to be, you know, an octave below is 220, 110. It's going to follow a similar pattern, but the 440 tuning frequency, which is what they call the international tuning standard. Why we need that is beyond me, other than control.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Now, the sacred frequencies, or the frequencies from what are called the perfect circle of sound, are very interesting when you carry out the numerology. And I'm affiliated with Dr. Len Horowitz and Tetrahedron Records, and we're producing music that's tuned to the sacred frequencies that Da Vinci wrote about, even. The 528 frequency, 528 hertz, or 528 cycles per second, represents a totally different concept. It speaks of love, number one. And if we do numerology on those numbers, adding 5, 2, and 8, we get 7 and 8 is 15, 1 and 5 is 6. That's divisible by 3. We look at another frequency, the one right below that, and it's below 440, 417 hertz. 4 plus 1 is 5, plus 7 is 12, and 1 and 2 is 3. Now, as we move from these frequencies, there are other frequencies as well. We don't need to go through all of them right now, but as we go from one frequency to the next, there's an interesting thing that happens with the octaves. If you double 417, you get 834. Let's do the math on that one. 8 and 3 is 11, and 4 is what? 15. 1 and 5 is 6. So we jumped from a 3 to a 6. Now, if I go up another octave, it's going to work out to be a 3. The octaves alternate 3, 6, 3, 6, 3, 6, 3, 6 as you go up. And the same thing happens as you go down. As you go down an octave, you divide the frequency by 2 to arrive at the octave below, and 2 again to go another octave down. Each time it will revert. But all of those numbers, in fact, all of the sacred numbers end up being 3s, 6s, and 9, all divisible by 3.
I see.
Can we make an analogy between the Trinity and the number 3?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Sure.
It's right there, see?
Sure.
Those are God's numbers. Those are sacred numbers.
Sure they are.
Now, is it possible to construct a 7-tone scale from those frequencies?
Absolutely. You see, we're just talking about centering the tuning frequency to one which is more compatible with the human spirit, the human mind, and the human body.
Wow.
And its relationship to creation.
Oh, that's fantastic, Don. Thank you. You know, I'm very interested in this, and I didn't know where to go, but you just cleared a lot up for me.
That's sort of a crash course on that, John. So
yep.
and Joe.
Yeah, John, I appreciate you calling in, boy. And John, I want to tell you.
I tell you, you're doing a fantastic job. I always get so much when I listen to you speak, Joe, and I really, really appreciate it. And I want to thank Don for, you know, having you on. It's so great.
We thank the Father for it, John. That's the only place I could have gotten this from.
It's
been good to me.
Yeah. Can I mention one other thing about colors? And
yes, go ahead.
And sound? Now, I teach guitar, and I noticed some of my very young students, when they first come in to take lessons, one little kid, he was probably about 8 years old, he was playing and he strummed on an E string. He says, "Oh, look at the colors." I say, "What?" He said, "Look at the colors." I said, "What colors?" He says, "Don't you see colors?" I said, "No, I don't see colors." And so I took a survey of all my little young students, and it seems like from age 12 and above, they do not see colors, but from around 11, 10, below, they see colors. Now, I'm wondering why they lose that sensitivity to that.
Well, it may not be that they lost the sensitivity. You may be seeing a new phenomenon with this generation.
That may be. Yes.
Okay. Now, all of us can see these. Okay. So the older kids can be taught to see it.
Okay.
They can be taught, but it's going to vary from individual to individual. It's you may have heard me say that. I know this is a knowing, this is not a belief. I know that all of us have intuitive gifts. We all have spiritual gifts at our disposal if we lead a righteous life, if we take care of our bodies and watch what we eat and nourish our ourselves, not just physically, but mentally and spiritually as well. And when we live a righteous life, we open that doorway to those gifts.
Right.
And now they're misused. The dark side uses these things. These go way back to the days of Egypt. We can get into alien presence on the planet and the pharaohs being controlled by monatomic gold and the power that they were given to rule over their people. And we can go way back to those days and see that that there was certain spiritual principles that were practiced, but they were practiced through magic.
Right.
Okay, I'm speaking about the natural gifts that the Creator has given us.
Yes.
And so you're seeing this in these kids. I would encourage you to keep that alive in those kids.
Yeah. That's an excellent point. Could I ask you one question?
No.
Yes.
I was wondering, so we talked about David playing the harp. Now I'm wondering if there was any way of figuring out how his instrument was tuned. What frequencies the harp was tuned to?
Well, I don't know. You want to answer that question, Joe, or do you want me to answer that?
I'd like you to answer it, Don.
Okay. The thing here, depending on the instrument, pianos, acoustic pianos and harps and some guitars, it's an issue. When you have a guitar that is really under a lot of stress when you bring it up to a pitch, let's say A440, and you're going to try to increase that frequency to 528. It can be a strain because it's a percentage of a pitch that it's raised. It's almost a half step, but it's short a half, or a semitone. It's short a semitone from 440.
Sure.
Yeah, you can actually calculate, how many hertz it is from 440 to 528. Just do the math there.
Yeah.
It's 88 hertz. Okay, and that may be difficult for some pianos. It's not impossible. A piano would have to be taught through pitch raising and retuning and another pitch raise and retuning to get the pin block to stabilize and to not stress the plate of the instrument or not pop the strings. That is, you don't want to be popping strings on a piano. It might be on an acoustic piano that can mechanically be tuned one string at a time, you might want to tune it to 417 hertz.
Okay.
Now, it makes it much easier. A piano can go flat, so it's much easier to bring it down from 440 to 417 than it is up to 528. However, on a digital piano, I own one, and it's very easy for me to tune that whole instrument.
Yep, absolutely.
Up to 528.
Right.
So it and most wind instruments you can do that. It might be difficult on a clarinet. It might be difficult on certain flutes. But hopefully, this will be accepted to the point where the musical instrument manufacturers will allow this to occur.
I see. Okay.
I mean, this is if when you try this, and I'll tell you, people notice the difference right away. I have some music. Maybe I'll play some music in 528 at the end of the show here before we go off the air.
Okay.
I have some of my original music. I'm doing all my music in 528 or 417 right now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And the feeling is really indescribable, the things that people experience.
Well, I copied a CD that one of your programs a few days ago where you played a portion of your music, and I gave that to Joe, and you know, he mentioned right away he tuned right in on it. So you know, I know Joe felt that right away. And I did all
very enjoyable. It was very enjoyable. You know, music in the First World Age was very important. We see it in Job 38:7 that I quoted. The sons of God sang in the heavens. It was a very happy time, and they sang. Music was even very important in that First World Age. Don, one question I have, too, that John and I have talked about. John, the receptors in the ear are very important. Even in the scriptures, it talks about those that have ears to hear.
Yes.
Something in the physical ears that I would have to describe them as like receivers. Certain people have them, certain people don't have them. Some people have them and can pick up certain sounds, some people cannot pick up certain sounds, depending on their physiology. And there's something in the ear that receives certain notes that are played. The ear has the ability to pick these up that other people can't pick up. Could you expand on that a little bit, Don?
Well, if I were to share with you what my feeling is on that, I would say that we, in terms of science or in terms of medical science, refer to all of the components of the inner ear, the eardrum and the stirrup and all of these different components that create the different resonant frequencies or allow the ear to amplify the sound. We have an aspect in our ear called the cilia, which are like little hairs. And I know that in cases where certain musicians haven't suffered any damage to their eardrum or these inner mechanical aspects of the ear, often what they've done is they've destroyed the cilia, which are those little hair cells, and that's usually caused by excessive low frequency or high volume of music. Listening to 120 decibels or even 110 decibels for long periods of time cause those cilia to sort of become paralyzed. And as a sound engineer, I encourage engineers who are mixing or recording in the studio to make sure that they're not listening to the music too loud. They have this tendency to want to feel it, and they associate feeling it with the volume. And it destroys those cells over a period of time. They can become paralyzed, and then they can restore back their sensitivity. They can regain their sensitivity. Or they can become paralyzed and remain that way and atrophy. or become dead. And so you lose that ability to sense the higher frequencies. So
it's interesting that some people, you had, let's say you have three or four people sitting in a chair listening to music, and one person say to the other one, did you hear that? And the other person didn't hear that particular pitch. It's the same with the scriptures. Some people do have the ears to hear in the spiritual, and other people just can't hear the same thing. It's not that they're doing something wrong. It's just that the Father hasn't given them that ability to hear that yet.
Okay, in a metaphysical sense, that is true, and that's an issue of multidimensionality there. It actually transcends physical and enters the spiritual realm.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the other way to answer that, and both are possible. We have the three-dimensional sensitivity to what's going on, and that varies person to person. This is why women, for example, don't have the capacity to listen to or to hear as much bass, so they automatically crank the bass on their equalizer or on their radio or their stereo system because they like to feel the bass. Their physiology doesn't allow them to reproduce that frequency like it's reproduced in a male. Yet, on the other hand, males tend to hear less treble, so they boost the treble.
Interesting. But John, any other questions?
No, I was primarily interested in the music aspect. Now, there's other parts. The Song of Moses is another aspect of how important music was. Maybe you could touch on that a little bit, Joe.
Yeah, Don. I've always asked musicians when I talk to them over the years, if they could put the Song of Moses to music, which is Deuteronomy 32, if I was to encapsulate the entire Bible into one chapter, that would be a Song of Moses. I'd encourage everybody that could to listen to that Song of Moses. But this man that you're talking to right now, John, was the only musician that could put that. He put that song of that chapter to music, and what a beautiful job he did with the moods that he set and the feeling that his music put into it. Phenomenal job, John. Phenomenal.
I didn't ask for that, but I was just to touch on the meaning of that. But
That is probably the Bible encapsulated in one chapter.
Yeah.
I'd read the last part of 31 leading into it, Moses' admonition to the children.
Yeah.
He called all the Levites, the teachers, together and gave them this admonition. And for those that want to take a look, the last part of 31 and all of 32.
Yes.
Very, very important. It's probably the entire scripture right in there.
Yes.
Is there any way you can arrange for us to hear that sometime?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's fine. Can I mention this one little thing?
Go ahead, John.
I used to listen to you, Don, when you were on Herzog's show and Giuliani show, and I mean, the first time I heard you, it's like, oh, I got to know more about this guy. And I followed you until I found you on BBS, and I'm so glad I did. But when I started writing that the Song of Moses, I was thinking of you, and I was saying, man, if he could arrange this, this'd be so killer, So I'll see if I can get it to you, and you can see what you think.
Well, I can arrange it. I mean, is it just guitar music, or...?
No, it's all orchestrated.
Oh. Well, then you arranged it.
Yeah, I know, but you get that expertise. I'll send it to you, and you can evaluate it, see what you think, and,
Okay. Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Okay. And I'll play it on the show, too. We'll let the audience hear.
That would be great.
I sang on it, but you're gonna find a singer that sings it because I'm not a good singer. But I sang it just so I could demonstrate the verses and the notes and that. So,
okay.
I'll get that.
John, you did an excellent job on it.
Well, John, don't be a stranger. Call into the show from time to time.
I will. It's the first time. I don't call into shows. I'm a little bit nervous, but it's such a pleasure to talk to you and Joe. And Joe did such a great job, and I applaud you, Don, and thank you for having him on.
Well, it's my pleasure. We'll have him on again, too.
Fantastic. I'll see you guys. The lead calls out.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye, John.
Joe, would you like to hear a little bit of this music that I was talking about? Would you like... music designed, to affect healing, to bring peace where someone has suffered a loss in the family, a loved one, where they're looking for closure, or they're even looking to expand their consciousness.
Great, Don.
Thank you.
Wondering what you felt there.
Donna, first, to entitle that song, it would be to the chief musician, Psalm of David. To the chief musician, who is the Heavenly Father. He's the highest musician.
Well, that music is tuned to the color of the heart. It's interesting that you would give it that title.
In the scriptures, the heart is the mind, or the mind of the heart. In the Hebrew, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it's just one example. Now, every song that I've composed using these principles is different from the others. Totally different. And yet, I get the same descriptions from those that listen to it. And it's amazing. I have music that I've written with the intention of lowering a fever in someone or improving their circulation. And people will describe the color blue or feeling cold or, you know, they feel what the music is doing. They have different ways of describing it, and yet, when I tell them the title of the song, sometimes I just name the song after the color, and add the word light at the end. So it's an interesting phenomenon, but this is an example of what John's first question was, the correlation between sound and light. All of those sounds, and believe it or not, there were only four instruments playing all that music you heard.
That's Yeah.
So you're going to have to bring your bass on, I think, the next time you come on.
Sure.
I'd like to hear some of the music that you're working on as well.
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, maybe we'll do that. This has been enjoyable, Don. This has been really enjoyable. I hope it's been a blessing to those that hear it.
Oh, I'm sure it has. I mean, we touched upon some different things. You've had quite a beginning to get in, you know, to cover all these different aspects of consciousness. And that experience led you to become a student of the Bible, to study Scripture, and really extract a meaning out of what you're reading. It's very different from what you hear in mainstream organized religion. Which I think is really being it's being abused, and it's leading people down a path of false promises and false hope.
And that's the way it happened in the end of the First World Age too, Don.
Yeah. Well, in parting, Joe, would you like to leave any message for the listening audience? And until the next time we have you on, it'll be next month if you'll come back on again.
Sure. Just like to say that don't fear anything as far as this flesh is concerned. Just fear your Heavenly Father. Fear Him, and when I say fear Him, means respect Him. Get into His scriptures, get the little morsels that we talked about here tonight, and see for yourself. Don't take a man's word for it. Just see for yourself what you can extrapolate out of the scriptures. Pray while you're doing it, and He'll give you what you should have, what you should know. Don't worry about a flesh man in these end times, because deception has gone rampant and deep. But just study what you can for yourself, get what you can. Father's not going to hold you accountable for what you don't know. And set yourself free. Just enjoy every day as it is, and enjoy the blessings that you have, and keep it simple, and don't worry about this material flesh body. Just concern yourself with the eternal spirit body and the happiness of the days ahead that are coming. It's going to be great happiness again, as it was in the first world age. And when you get out of this flesh body, it's going to be a beautiful, beautiful feeling of escape. But no shortcuts. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Joe. And I look forward to your next appearance on the show.
Thanks a lot, Don. And thank you for everything.
And please give my best to Rick Adams, if you would.
I will do that.
Thank him from the bottom of my heart and from the listening audience for inviting you to Evident Footprints.
You're welcome, Don. I'll tell him that.
Okay. I would also like to extend my thanks to some listeners out there, Mill, and also Nellie, for sending me some links to some really interesting videos out there. The truth is still coming out in a lot of topics, and we're going to touch upon some of these before the end of this week. I may even play the audio portions of some of this information. Also, my best goes out to Karen, Bob, and Bill, David Crenshaw, Zachariah, Sheila, Sylvia, and Jill, and most of all, the General. We appreciate you folks and all my listening audience around the country and in Canada. Especially, thank you so much for your kind emails and for tuning in. If you enjoyed tonight's show, consider subscribing to the BBS archives. You can, for a year, download all the archives on BBS Radio. More shows are coming out all the time. My special thanks go out to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight. Seth, you did a great job. Thanks for handling the phones and all the interruptions and everything, and ironing out the technical problems. Most of all, I'd like to thank the listening audience for tuning in. Join us tomorrow night for Carl Pearson. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.